yes, essential work, and I struggle with it because I'm not sure that we treat them like they're essential.
And that's something that...
Okay, we're recording now. We're ready to go.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, everyone. This is the Friday, August 28, 2020 meeting of the Board of Land and Natural Resources. It's 9:01 a.m. Thank you for joining us. We're holding this meeting on Zoom due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And so we have participants here, the board members here on Zoom with our Deputy Attorney General. We have staff members, and we have the applicants for each agenda item. We also have people who have signed up for written for oral testimony in advance. They're in the waiting room, and they will join us for their respective items. Meeting is being broadcast live on YouTube, so the public can join. Please remember to put your screen on mute while we, except if you are talking. And I'm going to ask Dr. Gahn to read our standard contested case statement.
Thank you, Chair Case. In some of the matters before the board, a person may wish to request a contested case. If such a request is made before...
Hang on. We have a little bit of background noise. So board members, could I ask you to please put your screen on mute, except when you're talking. Darlene, also, I'm going to put you on mute. And then I also wanted to remind everybody, if you're in the meeting, to please turn off the YouTube because you'll get a reverb. Okay.
Can you hear me now, Cher?
Yeah, that's much better. Thank you. Okay.
Okay. I put on my earphones as well so that I don't have to. Yeah. Anyway. In some of the matters before the board, a person may wish to request a contested case hearing. And if such a request is made before the board's decision, then the board will consider the request first before considering the merits of the item before it. A person who wants a contested case may also wait until the board decides the issue, then request a contested case after the decision. It is up to you. Any request must be made in writing within 10 days. And if no request for a contested case is made, the board will make a decision. The department will treat the decision as final and proceed accordingly. You're muted, Chair.
All right. We're generally going to go in the order of the agenda, but we are, for scheduling purposes, going to move up item F2. So we're going to start with item F2. That's a Division of Aquatic Resources.
Chair. Are you withdrawing an item?
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. We are withdrawing F1. Withdrawing F1. Okay, F2.
Aloha. Good morning, Chair and board members. Brian Nielsen, Administrator for Division of Aquatic Resources. Other staff joining in on the Zoom this morning is David Sakota, DAR Program Manager, as well as our DAR Kona Biologist, Nikki Smith. This is Agenda Item F2, Settlement Agreement with Formosa Wealth Management for Stony Coral and Live Rock Damage resulting from the October 2nd, 2018 Formosa anchoring within the Kailua Bay Zone of Kona Coast Fisheries Management Area, Island of Hawaii. I'll hand it over to David Sakota to summarize our submittal.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning, Chair and board members. This submittal arises out of an anchor damage that happened on October 2nd, 2018 off of Kona. It's actually within the Kona Bay area, the Kailua Bay area of the Kona Coast Fisheries Management Area. Our staff did a few surveys of the area, and they calculated, they counted the number of colonies damaged and the area, and we have a table in the submittal estimating the proposed fine based on the number of colonies and the size of the colonies damaged, and it came out to about $153,000, you know, penalty for the damaged resources, and then adding on another about $5,000 for the cost of that follow-up investigation. We've tried to work out a settlement with the yacht owner, Formosa Wealth Management, and we've agreed to a settlement, or they've agreed to a proposed settlement of $100,000. We recommend that the board accept this settlement, just considering the difficulties in pursuing this violation against a foreign vessel. And if there's any questions, you know, most of the information is outlined in the submittal, but I'd be happy to answer any questions the board might have. We also have Nikki Smith, who is one of the two Kona biologists who actually conducted the assessment, and she's happy to answer any questions as well.
Thank you. Board members, questions of staff?
I have a few questions. I'm trying to get an idea for the damage, especially to the Porites lobata. You have 316 colonies. Or are we talking, you know, these can be a lot of different sizes. Or what's the typical size we're talking? Are we talking, you know, coconut size? Are we talking sofa size? And how much damage to the colonies?
I'll let Nikki take that question.
Sure, no problem. Most of the lobata colonies within that damaged area were not quite too sofa-sized, but they probably were about a meter tall and a meter wide, some slightly larger than that and some smaller as well. So decent-sized colonies for sure.
Meter-sized. I'm sorry. I might have said Porites lobata. I meant the Porites compressa. That's the 300.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So the compressa bed was actually quite extensive in that area. So the damage, a lot of the damage actually occurred from the chain of the anchor swinging through the bed. Mm-hmm. So that toppled some lobata colonies, but also caused a lot of damage to the compressa. That area, I would estimate to be probably 100 square feet, if not more.
You mean the area of coral that was the Porites coral that was damaged is about 100 square feet in all?
Yeah. Let me double check that. Yeah. So the compressa bed was quite extensive. See, in the table that you can see in the submittal, there were multiple colonies listed, ranging in size from 8 meters squared to 22 meters squared.
8 meters squared to 22. Yeah, I'm really messing up here because I keep confused. You know, I keep saying the wrong Porites species. I'm sorry. So let me get this straight. Now, let me go back to this. So the mound coral, Porites lobata, we have 316 yes. specimens, and yes. about bigger. When we say, you know, how big are those specimens?
Those are probably 1 meter tall, 1 meter wide, some 2 meters, but most of them were around the 1 meter squared size.
And are they knocked off or?
Yeah, a lot of them were toppled over and upside down.
And then the Porites compressa, we're basically calculating that on an area basis rather than on a individual basis.
Yeah, that method. Sorry.
It seems that the basis for this would be $1,000 a square meter for the Porites compressa?
Yes, I can answer that one. The way that the rule is set up, it for per specimen damage for stony coral, it's counted as each colony for single colonies less than a square meter. or each square meter for colonies greater than 1 square meter. And so because there were a number of varieties compressed to colonies greater than 1 square meter, we counted per specimen based on the area. But we also recognize that these larger colonies are more valuable. So we assigned for all of those colonies greater than 1 square meter, we assigned a $1,000 per specimen value, which is the maximum.
Is that true for the Parietes lobata?
The Parietes lobata were not larger than 1 square meter, or at least when I did the calculations, I couldn't tell from the recordings. But my understanding was they were to be considered as 1 square meter or less. And also some of them, a lot of them were not fully toppled over. I know some were, but I think some were, you know, suffered various levels of scraping and damaging to the head. So the way that it was documented, it was easier to just calculate it on a per colony damaged, using that for a per specimen count.
I noticed that the boat did move, did pull anchor and move to a sandy anchorage after this was reported. How promptly was that done? And was it DLNR that told them to move, or was it, you know, sort of the general attention?
It was moved that afternoon. I believe they contacted, it was Dobor staff that contacted the vessel. I believe, Nikki, can you correct me if I'm wrong?
That's correct. I believe Dobor contacted them because Dobor has a specific anchoring area within Kailua Bay. So they were told that they were in the wrong location.
Okay. And that was after reports from members of the public that they had been anchored on coral. So the public contacted DAR staff and Dobor. I believe they contacted Dobor first, and Dobor was able to contact the vessel to have them move it further offshore.
About how far offshore was it originally anchored?
They were not very far offshore. If you're familiar with Kailua Bay, the pier extends, so they were within the bounds of the bay. They were within the area that the cruise ships normally anchor, which is from the shoreline looks to be in the perspective of the bay.
Like if you drew a line from the end of the pier to the point with where Hulahei Palace is on the other side of the bay, would they be anchored within that or close?
Not within that, but just past that. So they weren't within the pier line. They were from the pier, but probably in line with the heiau that's near the King Kamehameha Hotel in the Paul Allen Estate.
Okay, that is pretty close. Do we have any photos?
Yes. I didn't attach them, but staff did document photos of the damage.
That helps a lot in evaluating something like this. To see photos. That's all I have right for now. I might have something for our attorney in a bit, but that's all I have for staff now.
Oh, and Nikki, I'm sorry, would you just say your name for the record?
Sure, Nikki Smith.
Okay, with DAR Kona.
With DAR Kona, yes.
Thanks. Okay, other questions, board members of staff?
Jimmy, sure. This is Jamie. I have a question.
Okay, Kaivi, and then I think Jimmy was going to talk, but Jimmy, you were on mute. Okay, go ahead, Kaivi.
Okay. Out of curiosity, upon the discovery that this occurred, What was the negotiation or conversations like with Formosa? How would you characterize that kind of discussion?
So from the DoCare reports and the DAR reports, it sounds like they were very cooperative. The crew didn't realize that they were on coral, and so they took immediate action to lift the anchor and move further offshore.
Thank you.
Mr. Gomes.
Go ahead. Why aren't we going after the maximum fine of $153,400 plus admin's fee? What brought that up? You know, I'm thinking, why is $100,000? We're short $58,000. Why aren't we not fining the total as submitted on this table here?
Again, this is a settlement, and we realize it'd be challenging, you know, to prosecute or go after them for the full amount. And so, you know, to save staff time and just everything that it would take to go through a contested case hearing if it went to that, we're recommending, we feel like $100,000 is a significant amount. And, you know, Formosa Wealth Management recognizes the damage that they caused and is willing to settle for that amount. So we feel comfortable recommending that. It's not insignificant.
So it's like a slap on the wrist, if I'm thinking about it. I've seen pictures of this ship or boat, whatever you call it, and looking at what Inga put in as far as a testimony, I need to kind of side with her because it makes so much sense. But that's the reason why I asked that question.
Other questions, comments, board members? This is a representative of the Formosa Wealth Management. Want to make any statement?
Good morning, Chair Case, board members. Norman Leasy, Coxwood and Lerner for Formosa, pardon me, Wealth Management Limited. Very briefly, Chair Case, I'd just like to say that Formosa Wealth Management, my client, is appreciative of the willingness of the department to negotiate this matter, and would like to express its appreciation as well as to staff, in particular Mr. Sakota, Ms. Chow, and Mr. McDermott for their hard work and professionalism here. I'm happy to answer any questions to the extent I can from any of the board members.
Okay, board members, questions?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
Does this vessel regularly come into Hawaii?
I don't know, Mr. Yun. I can say it regularly comes. It has come previously on charter, and I believe that it had been in Hawaii at least once before this incident occurred.
Does it, and it has been in Hawaii since?
No.
It comes in on a charter then. Is that how it works?
It can. Certainly if it's chartered, then within its trading limits, the charter decides where the vessel will travel. But the vessel is typically positioned in different parts of the world during the course of the year.
Where is it normally, most often?
Asia, principally.
Okay, that's all I have. Thank you.
Other questions, board members? No questions? Somebody want to make a motion Oh, sorry. There is written public testimony on this. It's posted. I don't believe there's any oral testimony on it.
You know, our submittal alludes to legal issues as a reason for compromising this. And rather than having a discussion with over the legal issues with the potential, with all due respect to Mr. Leasy, the potentially adverse party, I would like to make a motion to discuss legal issues in executive session. And perhaps we can have some discussion of them afterwards, but for the moment, I would like to go into executive session to discuss those legal issues.
Thank you. Is there a second on that?
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, thank you. That passes. We are going to go into executive session. Oh, sorry. Yeah, go ahead. Well, we're going to go into executive session.
Here, the reason for going into executive session is according to...
Well, Mr. Ewan stated that we are going into executive session to get advice of our legal counsel as to matters here. Mr. Ewan.
Chris, I only can see your glasses.
We're back in the main session. We have to go back into the executive session. We're just adjusting the executive session.
I don't know what happened.
Darlene is adjusting the executive session.
Like Chris had a blackout.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. It was I was too bright for a minute, and then I...
hang on, you guys. We're back in the main session. Okay. Darlene is trying to get us back into the executive session.
Okay.
Okay, we are back in session in the Board of Land and Natural Resources meeting, coming back from executive session. Mr. Ewan's screen is darkened, but we know it's him there. All right. Mr. Ewan, did you want to make a statement about?
Yeah, from out of the shadows here. And I assure you that I haven't done anything on my end, at least that I know of. We went into a session and just discussed some procedural matters and decided that we should have the substantive discussion out in open session and that we could do that. And so I just have a couple of questions, more general questions for our Deputy Attorney General who's been working on this. And that basically to explain to us what are the legal issues in pursuing a claim against the Formosa and or its owners that might be different than the kinds of things that would happen if we had somebody in Hawaii that, a Hawaii resident that did the same thing.
Okay, so part of the problem is that, you know, under maritime law, there's issues as to when damage is caused by a vessel, who's responsible for it, and there's issues whether or not we could go after the owner of the vessel, or if we'd have to go after the vessel itself, which would basically mean that we'd have to bring a maritime claim. There could be an issue as to whether or not we'd have to go after the pilot themselves, and the pilot, of course, is not a Hawaii citizen. Even with regards to just bringing the matter. So as far as the pilot is concerned, we noted in the submittal that the, I think it's called, I'm looking for the name of it, is basically the guide, the Pacific Islands Pilot Guide or Volume 3, which describes different areas, marine areas around the state and are a guide for captains, especially ones who have never been in Hawaii waters before. And in this instance, this particular captain had not was not familiar with this area and had not anchored here previously. The description in the Pacific Islands pilot states that Kalua Bay is bottom is sand and that the anchorage is unsafe during winds because there's no solid place to anchor. So, you know, it wasn't like the pilot had noticed ahead of time that he might be anchoring on coral. The other problem that we could potentially run into, which, you know, I think was already alluded to, is that some of our assessments of damage, we don't have maybe the best information or documentation on it. We've been very frank with the Formosa people, and they do understand, you know, how we calculated our fines, and, you know, so there is some potential that, you know, we may not be able to substantiate all of the fines.
Can I stop you just there? Because I really, sure. I really am only interested in the issue of maritime law type issues. Do you acquire jurisdiction over a vessel? What do you do? That's gone out of your jurisdiction.
That I don't know. I mean, frankly, I don't know because nobody in our division is very well versed in maritime law. We could ask Mr. Leslie, who is an expert in maritime law. But you know, that would be just another thing we'd have to try to figure out is how do we actually get jurisdiction over this vessel? And it is, I believe, according to the testimony, about to leave the ownership of Formosa. So I'm not sure who the next owner might be and whether or not we could go after them for, you know, for the damage.
Well, if I could just make a couple of comments. One is before I forget, I think our staff should write to the publisher of this guide and let them know that if this is something that's relied on by a lot of boats, let them know they're wrong so that boats don't go anchoring where they're not supposed to in Kailua Bay or anywhere else that they're aware of. And the second is that this isn't the last time this is going to happen. It's not the first time it's happened either. You know, we've had boats go aground, pile up on reefs, and sometimes they're going to be foreign flag vessels. So we need to find out what we should do. There, it may be that we, when this kind of thing happens, I tried to do a little bit of reading on the subject, and you know, I probably learned enough to get myself in trouble if I ever tried to practice law in this area. But it's there may be a need to take some kind of emergency action in federal court when this happens to acquire jurisdiction over the vessel and the owners before they go sailing off again. And, you know, with 2020 hindsight, maybe that's the kind of thing we need to be prepared to do so that we can not be in a position where we have to feel like, because of a legal technicality, we should compromise a claim.
Okay, other questions, comments, board members?
I have a comment. I like the fact that we explored the reasons for the claim. I'm not the claim, but the compromise settlement. Because otherwise, without that kind of explanation on public record, there may be other situations in which people say, "Well, I'm not gonna go for the full amount of the claim. I'm going to go for a lesser amount, and maybe I can settle something." But we see in this the documentation of the complications that are involved in the international vessel situation, and that we will probably be taking steps.
Sam, we're losing your audio.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. Well, to make it short, I'm glad that we had the discussion, because then we can, in the future, prevent attempts to settle without due cause.
Thank you. Okay, other questions, comments? Tommy, you're on mute. Yeah.
Yeah, you know the settlement, according to the board submittal, it includes, says it will, it includes staffs, cover the state's associated administrative costs. Administrative costs, isn't that the $5,000 need to be added to the $100,000?
You want me to answer that, Susan?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead, David?
Yeah, so the under the proposed settlement, the $100,000 would include that $5,000 staff cost. So it'd be folded in.
Well, it's
not added.
It's and it isn't included. According to the what I'm reading, it's and to cover state associated administrative costs.
Oh, sorry, I think maybe the way we worded it wasn't as clear as it could have been. It's a contribution of $100,000 to compensate the state for, one, the habitat damaged in the incident, and two, to cover the state's associated administrative costs.
That's what you guys did.
Yeah.
What the board submitted.
That's actually looks like that's the language of the submittal. Is it folded in?
Okay, this is wondering on that. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions, comments?
One more question on the, it says that it'd be held in trust, the 100,000 would be held in trust for a coral in basically in West Hawaii. Isn't there a fund that this, that a fine like this goes into? And can we actually earmark it? I mean, I'm happy to this way, but I'm just wondering if there. I thought there was a broader fund that these kinds of fines went into, and I didn't know if that we were actually allowed to earmark fines for a specific purpose like this.
Typically, do you want to go ahead, Linda?
Yeah, so basically I think because it's not a fine but a settlement that we can, and the agreement of Formosa is that the settlement shall be used for restoration of coral in West Hawaii, that it qualifies for a trust fund or for it to be put into a trust fund for that specific purpose rather than a fine that would go into either a special fund or a general fund or the general fund.
What special fund would this, if we actually got a fine?
It's a trust fund. It's not a special fund. It's a trust fund.
What is the fund that this would, if we collected a fine, you know, we levied a fine and they just paid up, what would happen to it?
Brian, can you, do you know which fund it would go into?
Typically, we create a whole new trust fund for each individual settlement case like this. For example, the Port Royal ship grounding in Oahu has its own trust fund just for that settlement. So we don't commonly mix different settlement cases together. It's its own separate trust fund.
What I'm asking is a little bit different, and thanks for explaining the difference. But if we pursued this as a violation and collected $158,000 as a fine, where would that go?
I believe there's an enforcement special fund within the chair's office that it could go into as an administrative fine.
And that's available for, is it restricted to certain purposes?
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look at the statutory language.
But more, it'd be more general than coral in West Hawaii.
That's correct.
I see, okay.
Okay, any other questions? Somebody want to make a motion to approve the staff submittal as submitted?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve the staff submittal as submitted. And I'll stop right there to wait for a second and not discuss it.
Is there a second? Somebody want to second that?
I'll second.
Thank you. All right, any discussion, board members?
Well, just briefly. I've been a lawyer long enough to know that things are never as simple as they seem, and if things seem a little complicated at the beginning, they're bound to get more complicated as time goes on. It's a significant fine, and I don't think it's letting them off lightly. I am alarmed at the amount of damage done, but it is a significant fine, and I like the fact that we're going to be able to earmark the settlement money for the region impacted.
Thank you. Other comments, board members? Okay, no further comments. I'll call for the vote. All in favor of approving the F2 as submitted, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, any opposed? Sorry, Jimmy, I put you on mute. Are you?
I'm opposing.
Okay, anyone else opposed? Okay, that is 6 in favor and 1 no. Mr. Gomes is voting no. The people voting yes are Oi, Case, Char, Yuen, Gon, and Yoon. Thank you very much. All right, thanks everyone for your work on this.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to the D items, starting with D1.
Good morning, board members. Russell Fuji for Land Division. D1 is we're asking the board to cancel a revocable permit 7870 and to waive the phase one requirement. This is a pasture type operation. Second, the issuance of a new revocable permit to Mr. Banyan for a pasture use, continued pasture use. I have no changes to this Kawaisen.
Okay, any questions, board members? There's no testimony on this. Right, somebody wanna make a motion to approve D1 as submitted? Mr. Oi. Thank you. Mr. Oi made a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you. D2.
D2 is another Kauai matter. We're asking the board to amend a prior board action. Bottom line is DOFA no longer is interested in the parcel, so and the county is interested in trying to create affordable housing. So we're going to be asking the board to set aside it to the county of Kauai for affordable housing purposes.
Any questions? Mr. Char.
Yes. At the time that this property is returned to the county, is there any, and if it is used for affordable housing, is there any consideration back to the state?
For the set aside, no. No. Generally, when we do executive orders setting aside lands to other agencies, state or county, the DLNR does not get compensation for that.
So if the county converts this to affordable housing, whatever the value of the land then goes to the county?
Yeah, that's correct. Usually these projects, though, my understanding of these affordable housing projects, they oftentimes in order to get a developer to come in and incur the cost for the development of the, prep the land and put in the infrastructure, do vertical construction. I often see agencies, and I'm referring to my sister agency, HHFDC, they basically give a 65-year, $1 a year lease to the developer. You know, pretty much the land is given away in exchange for the development and having the developer incur all the costs. And usually, of course, the developer in these affordable housing projects often rely upon tax credits from the government so that it can attract investors at favorable interest rates, is my understanding.
Thank you.
Are there questions? That
prevent the board from asking for compensation. And secondly, if the purpose of the set aside is, the purpose of affordable housing, so if it changes, they would need board approval. And at that point, also the board could chime in on any sharing of compensation.
Other questions? Okay. There's no testimony. Somebody want to move to approve?
Move to approve.
Second.
All right. All in favor? Say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. That passes unanimously. Thank you. D3.
Okay, D3 is a Big Island item with Parker Ranch coming back to the board for an amendment to a contemplated exchange of lands. And if some of you may recall, we took this to the board previously. We had a parcel in land in Waimea that was previously used by DOA as a water tank site, and which they no longer used, and they took away the tank. So we had this piece of land, and our access was this road. and it was always a flag lot. During some development plans that happened with Parker Ranch and somehow a snafu where they thought DOA had jurisdiction to sign off the plans, and DOA did, they basically cut off the parcel's access. And so once we learned about that, we had negotiated or talked to Parker Ranch, and they were, both parties are going to go try to seek an exchange. And we were interested in commercial properties or income producing properties. One of the problems on this site was that we valued the property as is with access, and it didn't come out very high, which was only like about $300,000. And for anyone to find parcels to substitute for that for income production is very slim. And so after many years of trying, this is what we're coming back to the board for a proposal for, is to approve an exchange of the lands, but except on the flag lot, it's only exchanging that portion of the flag that had access. And this, and the state would retain the bulk of the property in the back. Meanwhile, Parker is offering to give us an abutting parcel that would provide us access to a street. And so the parcel would no longer be landlocked. And if you look in the back, there's the maps. I hope you can understand it, but that's how the best I can explain it. You know, Parker Ranch is on here today to explain any further if this board has questions on the specifics.
Yes. Happy to provide any input or answer any questions. Aloha, Chair Case, and everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony in support of this land exchange. I think.
And your name for the record?
Jonathan Mitchell. I'm Vice President of Land and Asset Management at Parker Ranch.
Okay, questions, board members? Mr. Oi.
I'm looking at the map and the state going, they're going to give them the triangle piece in exchange for the flag.
The proposal is we get the triangle piece, yeah.
And then this is for Parker Ranch. That will still allow them access to the property.
Yeah, according to the maps, and Jonathan, you can chime in. That's supposed to provide us access to a road.
Yeah, it provides access to Aike Aloha Street, so there is legal access to that site.
Yeah, what about you guys' parcel? You have enough room above the triangle to access your property? But it seems like it was supposed to be in development, yeah?
It will be, and this is part of a multiple phase exchange. I think the next phase of this will be to exchange the...
Sorry, somebody has an echo. We have an echo. So if I could ask everybody except who's talking to be on mute, I think that it'll be clearer for everybody. So thank you. Okay, Mr. Mitchell, go ahead.
Sorry, no, that's okay. As I was saying, there's a multi-phased approach to this. So the triangle and the flagpole are exchanged in this first phase, and then a second exchange will happen with the actual reservoir site. And we're talking about some other potential for civic uses elsewhere. But we do have legal access to the other part of the parcel, so that's not impacted.
Okay, I just was wondering on that because the triangle that would become state property, and you know, if your access isn't wide enough to develop your property, then you would have to get land back from the state.
We would. The development horizon for that part of the parcel is far off, so we're going to work through the second phase of the exchange to be able to do that.
Okay. No, I just was wondering. I didn't want you guys possibly to be landlocked.
We're thinking about this as a multi-phase process. So we'll get to that development probably in the next phase.
Okay.
Thank you. Other questions, board members?
I had a question that's actually pretty similar to Tommy's, and that is for the Parker Ranch representative. The conceptual plan, we have Exhibit 3B, makes it look as though the subdivision was going to be extended, the Lualai'i project would be extended into the state property. And that it, and Tommy's question was part of this, where the access would involve the extension of a street that is now going to be cut off by that green triangle. Mm-hmm. Is that the long-term idea, is that Parker wants to extend Lualai'i into this whole area here that's currently open?
Yeah, at the time we had a JV with D.R. Horton on the Lualai'i development. The exchange was, as Russell alluded to in 2014, was on the horizon for potential fourth phase of the Lualai'i. That's since been shelved and it's no longer proceeding. So what we showed is sort of a reference map of what future potential development might be, but that's still to be determined.
Mm-hmm. That's all I have. Thank you.
Other questions? All right. If not, somebody want to move to approve D3 as submitted?
I move to approve as submitted.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. That passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Case. Thank you, Russell.
Thank you.
Aloha. Aloha. Okay, D4. And we have D4 and D5, we have an applicant representative here.
And these both of these are asking the board for the issuance of a land patent grant. Our abstracting team had reviewed this and prepared this submission, and recommending the issuance of a land patent grant in favor of those grantees listed on the submission.
Okay, the person who just joined, I assume that's Michelle Chi Dickinson.
Yes, good morning.
Okay, there we go. Okay, go ahead, Russell.
Yeah, so I don't have anything further to add other than I'll feel the board to issue the land patent grant. If you have questions, I'm here. Yeah, I'll try to answer as best I can.
Again, Russell. Tommy. What is the purpose of issuing one land patent at this time?
Well, we issued the patent as, you know, the first state conveyance of lands, which we assure clean title. Yeah.
So, in actually, you know, that's the question I have, you know, because I know this go back to the Mahalia that they're supposed to get one royal patent issued on the award, but then what's happening now is that they didn't have a royal patent, so are you saying the title wasn't clear?
Well, this process too is they apply for the land patent, and my staff got to research it and confirm commutation was satisfied, etc. Yeah, so it is quite late in the game, I agree, but this is something they need, and they've been asking for to clear title.
Well, they paid their commutation, it's just that there wasn't issued a royal patent. Correct.
Was there an issue in the, I don't know what was the, any hold up, if there was any in this one.
Okay.
We have a backlog of a lot of these here, you know, that we're working on. As you know, up until actually this year, I think it was, you know, we basically only had one abstractor for the state.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I if there's a backlog of all this issuance of land patent, then I think. you know, a lot of the escrow companies that selling properties that without royal patents, they should be pursuing getting a land patent grant, because in actuality, the escrow company is saying that they're ensuring a clear title, but there's no clear title to it unless they have a royal patent.
Well, the royal patent also gives them the state assurance, right? The state guarantee on title.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So I just trying to figure out what's going on. No, I know more or less what's going on, but you know, legally, title is not, they don't have a clear title, correct? Because the
land I think that's arguable. What we are providing is a state seal, you know, that it is clear title. And therefore, if there's anything that goes wrong later in a chain of title, they have a remedy to the state. Rarely happens, but that gives them, gives the title insurance companies more willingness to provide the title insurance than otherwise, if they don't have that, then the title company got to make a business decision on whether they're going to issue a title insurance or not. But it's not, doesn't mean it doesn't have clear title. If a buyer has title insurance one way or the other, whether you got a land patent or not, you know, you're going to rely on that title insurance, and it's really TG, the business entity, that has to support it. So we're just helping, I guess, keep making it a little easier for the title companies to insure these properties.
Well, I know, you know, that, and I know that process is just that, Takanya. I know, like you said, there's a lot of properties in Hawaii that won't issue a royal patent, and the state is issuing land patent, which is, I think is correct for a state to do, because the state is actually the government now.
Not everything has a land patent now. Be aware of that. So that doesn't mean this not clear title.
But that would ensure the make it clearer to the buyer or the seller that they do have title, and the title insurance company would, if you get on land patent, the title insurance company would be more easily to give you on a
probably yes, but that doesn't mean if you don't have a land patent, you cannot get title insurance, or you don't have clear title. Yeah, so
okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure that it's clear, because a lot of times, you know, like when I was the land agent, had a couple of state properties that, as a matter of fact, was Waimea Canyon. You know, up Waimea Canyon, the state developed a subdivision there, and portion of the property didn't have a royal patent, so we had to reissue them a land patent to get clear title to the property. So
thank you. Okay, Mr. Char.
Just following up with Tommy, I'm prepared to approve of the staff's recommendation, but for my own edification, I'd like to get a copy of the preliminary title report so that I can follow through in my own mind some of these issues on the land patent, and need to clarify. As I understand reading through the statutes, much of what we are doing is a quit claim. The state's not saying whether it has an interest or not. It's more in the nature of a quit claim release rather than a quit claim rather than warranty deed. I was curious as to whether the applicant here got a warranty deed and whether that was predicated on a title company assurance as distinguished from, you know, an error all the way back on the original land patent, the absence of a land patent. But as I said, eventually Russell, if I can get a copy of the preliminary title report, I would appreciate it for future references as to the procedure.
We'll send that to you right away.
Russell, I could get one, get a copy too.
Okay, other questions, comments? Go ahead.
Hey, Russell, doesn't TG and other title companies have a disclaimer usually as a part of these reports to get around this issue?
They may. I can't recall specifically. I haven't reviewed one for a while, so I haven't looked at title insurance for a while.
Right.
They probably do. They have disclaimers all the time. I mean, you know.
Can I also get a copy?
Okay, sure.
Put me down too, Russell, Jimmy.
Okay.
I'm hearing everyone would like to speak.
Should I send everybody? I'll send everybody.
Exactly, everybody.
Thank you.
Russell, you can just send it to me and I'll send it out to the board.
Okay, all right. Okay, Diane, tell me.
Could I just make a brief comment? My understanding of the situation with respect to Kuleana Properties is that first one obtained a land commission award from the land commission at the time. And then after paying commutation, you were entitled to receive a royal patent. Many properties never got the patent. That does not mean that they have some serious title defect. They received a land commission award. For the sake of completeness of their record, people ask for a patent now, you know, 150 years after the fact. So it's, I doubt that there's, you know, there may be an issue with title on this property after it was granted, but I think that for, in the normal practice of people regard the land commission award as having actually conveyed title by the kingdom, and the patent is further evidence is that commutation was paid and that there is no residual claim to commutation from the kingdom. Why this didn't happen, you know, 150 years ago when apparently commutation was paid on these properties, I don't know.
Okay, does the representative for the applicant want to say anything?
Well, just to answer the question that was raised earlier, the title guarantee is the company who prepared the preliminary title report that we used when we submitted this application. And they do have a disclaimer, as it was called here. They have an exception for the failure of a patent to have issued. So they do include that in their title report. It's sort of like an encumbrance on title in that it is shown on the title report as something that's recorded on title to the property that is, you know, goes along with title to the property until we get the patent issued. So that's why we're trying to resolve this now. And from my discussions with the DLNR staff, no commutation is owed. There's nothing that needs to be done. It's sort of like there just a patent wasn't issued prior. So now we just need to finish up the process. And that's what we're trying to do now. And then going forward, that encumbrance won't be on the title reports in the future.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, if not, somebody want to move to approve D4 and 5 as submitted?
I move.
Second.
All right. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. That's any opposed? Any abstain? That passes unanimously. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
D6
is we're asking the board for a right of entry to be issued to Goodfellows for grading, rough grading of existing fire break road and the mowing of grass. And this is up at the Maui Wind Farm Project, Kaiawa Wind Power 2 area. I believe this DOFA and OCCL were involved in the planning of this project.
Okay. Questions? board members? There's no testimony on this.
No question, but a comment. I mean, considering the fire-prone nature of that region of southern West Maui, it's really important to maintain those fire brick roads.
All right. Somebody want to move to approve D6 as submitted? Sorry, Jimmy, I'm going to ask to unmute you.
So moved. Staff submitted.
We got a second from Dr. Gahn. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstained? That passes unanimously. Thank you. D7, and we have an applicant coming in for that.
Okay. Yeah, and D7 from the state, D7 or D8 actually is very similar from the state side. It's this is an issue about roads and under these, going back just a general history, the roads.
Can you hang on 1 second, Russell? We're just connecting here. Mr. Endo, can you hear? Mr. Endo, can you hear? Okay, can you hear Mr. Endo?
I can, thank you.
Okay, go ahead, Russell.
Okay. As I was saying, this involves a public road. Both 7 and 8 are similar in that respect. Under 171-2, public roads are excluded from the jurisdiction of the board and the management jurisdiction of the board, and excluded from the definition of public lands. Public roads are either, by statute under 264 HRS, is either, if it's not a DOT highway, it's a county public road. We've always had, through history, dispute with the county about really the validity of that statute. But anyway, bottom line is this, the state's perspective is, we stick by our legal interpretation where the public roads is outside of our jurisdiction. However, the legislature, in their wisdom, passed Act 288, which was designed to assist the counties when they have these public roads that they no longer need and they want to dispose of. In order to help clear title to the land, the state is then able to come in and maybe assist. And how we assist is by way of either disclaiming an interest, which is a very simple way to do it, or actually filing giving them a quitclaim deed. But with the understanding that they're going to further dispose of the road, whether it's by lease or development. And here in this particular submittal, D7, I understand it's in connection with another property owner, AMB, and they're interested in acquiring the easement, this road area section. So the county has come to us to ask us, can you help us clear title and give us a quitclaim deed? And we've coming before the board to ask the board to allow us to do that. I hope that makes it simple. If you have questions, I'm open to questions.
Okay, any questions? Mr. Endo, did you have anything you wanted to add?
No, I'm just here to answer any questions and thank you for considering our matter.
And sorry, can you just state your name for the record?
I'm sorry, Randy Endo from Alexander and Baldwin.
Thank you. Okay, any questions, board members? All right, no questions, there's no testimony in this. Somebody want to move to approve?
Both approve for staff submittal.
Thank you, is there a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Any abstain? Okay, thank you. That passes unanimously. D8, Russell?
Yeah, D8 is similar, but a little quirky.
Wait. I think we have somebody coming in for that.
Sandy Fun, probably from the county.
Yeah. Okay, Ms. Fund, are you in and can you hear?
Yes, good morning, Chair Case. This is okay. Sandy Fund, Department of Land Management.
Maui City County. Honolulu.
Honolulu County. Honolulu County.
Yeah, sorry.
Honolulu. Yes.
Okay.
I'm a little to this. Did you want me to?
Yeah. Russell will make a presentation and then you can add something if you want. Hang on. So, Russell, go ahead.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. This one is similar, same concept, except little different facts here. Very similarly, this Union Mall, what we call Union Mall today, at one time was called Union Street, and was actually a real street and a public road. And the county acknowledged jurisdiction over that, and we even have attached as submittal a county council resolution or ordinance changing it and designating it, saying we're going from Union Street to Union Mall and making it a pedestrian mall. We're going to close down the street. And so that ends up being Union Mall here in downtown Honolulu for many, many years. What happened was in 1988, and we don't know exactly why it was done that way, but the county came to the state and asked to clear title to this area. And so the state gave them a deed, a quitclaim deed. However, it was not 100% deed, quitclaim. It was a conditional deed that said, if you no longer use it for a mall or a street, then you have to return it back to the state. Therefore, because of this deed, today they want to help dispose of it possibly to the other owners in the area or to that owner, the new developer that's coming in on that conversion of a state office office building in that area into affordable rentals. But we have this deed. And so they came to us to ask us, can we release it or sell it or get rid of this conditional thing here, because they want to dispose of it to a private entity, possibly it'll be a private entity or entities, and for purposes of assisting in the management of it. And the idea originally started out as a concept of like what we know in Honolulu as called Tamarind Park, where it is actually a private property but open to the public. People walk there and you have shops and on the ground floor, and then you have the office buildings on the top. And it allows for better management than public property under current law, because they can kind of close off and have hours of operation, etc. Anyway, we took a look at it and we have determined that the deed that was done in 1988 was really a nullity, because the county already owned the property in full, in 100% unconditional title. And therefore, any attempt by a third party to grant a deed with less than that is just futile. It's not going to work. And so, having come to that conclusion, we're asking the board that this is our analysis, and therefore we're asking the board to grant two things, only because we're not sure what's going to be required in closing. Is number one, allow us to issue a disclaimer, which is very simple. And then secondly, or a quitclaim of the state's interest in this road. And our position is it is not our road, so that's not a problem, quitclaim. Sandy Fun is a director of land management, representing the county, and I believe can answer questions if you have any on the disposition of it in the future.
Thank you, Ms. Fun. Anything you wanted to add to that?
Just a two-chair case and members of the board. We appreciate the analysis done by the land division of the LNR, and to assist us to clear the title, so to speak, on some that original action by DLNR created a gray issue related to the city owning full ownership of this Union Mall, or previously Union Street. So we're in full support of filing some kind of document as the AG for the state will figure out with land division, whether it's a disclaimer or a new quitclaim, so that the city can have 100% unambiguous title to Union Mall or Union Street. And then from there, we will need to go through our ordinances at the city to determine how best to convey the property to the developer that is inquiring about it or to any abutters. We have a very similar disposal law like the state, and determine if we could keep or convert it to private ownership, but still keep it public for the public so that we can improve the health and general welfare of that mall. Because as you know, after we've passed there, we have a lot of challenges with vagrancy and health issues related to littering and using the mall as a bathroom and, you know, those kinds of things. So this action will help us move forward on alternatives and options to get the mall into a better place for, you know, everyone in general. So we appreciate the support for this item.
Thank you. Questions, board members?
I wanted to add one thing, Chair, that we're also asking for cancellation of that prior 1988 deed.
Got it. Thank you. Mr. Char.
Is there, from the city standpoint, I gather the sense of what the rights that the state has is a reversionary clause rights. And so I'm wondering, as we disclaim, or probably more accurately, quit claim whatever interests we have, how the city intends to ensure that the property, even if it's turned over to a developer, will remain for public use. Second to this, I'm wondering, for instance, is there, you talk about Tamarind Park, but 4th Street Mall, is that similar in nature? And again, the issues of what the city plans to do to ensure that public access is available, and yet trying to devolve the responsibility for maintaining it to another party and the enforcement of that.
Well, thank you, board member. That's a really good question. And as you know, we're just struggling in downtown with the issues of keeping everything health and safety and in clean sanitation in the area. We will require Union Mall to have public access. The model that we're hoping to achieve is something like the Tamarind Park, which is on Bishop Street, where it is a free public access park, however, privately owned, so that there is the ability for the private owner to manage it much better than the city can. So that's kind of the model we're hoping to go for. But some of our other malls are not, in that conveyance format. Like 4th Street Mall is a mall owned by the city Department of Parks and Recreation. It is managed by a business improvement district, the 4th Street Mall Business Improvement District, to help us try to maintain the sanitation and health and safety there. And it is public, but we do have a lot of continued issues related to vagrancy and problems on that mall. It helps with the private assistance of the BID, but that's in a format sort of like Union Mall. And we do constantly have our issues there as well. So the developer and owner of 1132 Bishop that's adjacent is inquiring whether we could go forward with sort of a Tamarind Park model. They already do maintain this park, but because they don't have rights to secure the place if we have vagrants and stuff, we continue to have similar like with 4th Street Mall. So it's just a different model that we would like to explore, but we have a lot of processes to go forward on the city side from here related to our ordinances and discussion with our city council. But first step for us is we need to clear this discrepancy with the reversionary clause in the current DLNR deed. Yeah.
Okay. I'm satisfied, Chair.
Thank you. Other questions, board members? Tommy?
Or Russell?
Yes.
So, you know, you said you guys going to be canceling the land office deed. So what are you guys going to be issuing to the county of Honolulu?
Well, we're asking for both the disclaimer and quitclaim. And obviously, disclaimer is like we can easily do that, but very likely it might not work from a title insurance company standpoint, and they may ask for at least a quitclaim. You know? That's why we put in the quitclaim.
Okay. So then the state can come up with a document giving the county...
quitclaiming our interest.
In that... that roadway, correct?
Yeah, Union Street.
All right, thank you.
Hey, any other questions? If not, there's no other testimony on this. Is somebody want to move to approve D8 as submitted? So move, Mr. Char.
Second.
Second from
follow the Dubon. Recommendation of the staff.
Thank you. Second from Dr. Gunn. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstain? That passes unanimously. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good luck. Let's take a 5-minute break.
Darlene, could I chat with you for a second? You're on. I'm just trying to fix my video here, and somehow
Chris,
when we went into exec session, I suddenly got really dark, and I fixed it sort of by manually boosting my low light over here, but the video quality then is bad. I'm not sure if something happened on my end or on your end, it got me so dark.
Did you try logging out and logging back in?
Yeah, would you try that, Darlene?
I think you.
Sorry.
You would leave the meeting and then.
Okay, let me give that a try. No, that looks like it's fixed it.
Yeah, you're bright.
Yeah, okay. Now I have to turn down my I have to turn down my low light.
No, just leave it.
Well, it's
too bright.
And now it's too bright. Okay, great. Now I can fix that on my end, the too bright part. Yeah, well, we did the classic turn it off and turn it on again. Fix. Thanks, Suzanne.
It fixes everything.
Say, Chris can see you now. You're not hiding in the shadows.
Well, Suzanne suggested we do the thing that's always, that I forgot, is always the first thing you do when something goes wrong in your computer. Turn off whatever it is and turn it back on. And once we did that, it just cleared up the whole problem. So I look like a Rembrandt painting or something. I'm just, like the dark face coming out of the shadows. I had to make a searchlight almost that I put on myself so the people could see me. It was just shining in my face. I could hardly stand it. Boy.
You were like the mystery guest.
Yeah. somebody in the dark there at first, and then I was telling Tommy I have this sort of spotlight that I use to shine on my face, but that, you could barely see me, but then I have this light shining on me like I'm in police interrogation or something.
Yeah.
But Suzanne figured out how to fix it. She said, turn it off and turn it back on.
There it is. I don't know how many techs offer that advice, right? Turn your machine off and turn it back on again.
I got to remember that, because that works so often. And so many times you're knocking yourself. You're going, I was like going into like all kinds of settings and, I figured out how to, turn the gain, like the camera up from low light. And then it was a lot brighter, but it made me kind of pixelated, and so then just, turning it on and turning it off. I mean, turn it off and turn it on. Solve the whole problem. Yes.
Here.
Just a second.
Hey, Darlene, I think we're going to get started again.
Okay, we'll just make sure everybody's back. Just waiting for Mr. Ewan and Dr. Gahn. There's Dr. Gahn. Mr. Ewan has light, so that's great. Okay, we are back in session. We're gonna do D9 next.
Okay, D9, we're coming back to the board for a second amendment, the grant of a non-exclusive easement to Hawaiian Electric to add an additional 200 square feet to the easement area. Excuse me. This is up at Waihila Ridge, land currently under executive order to the Division of Forestry. I don't have anything to add to this at all.
Okay. Questions, board members?
Yeah, is this related to footings for the power lines that go up Waihila Ridge?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Can you repeat that?
Is this related to footing for power lines that go up Wa'ahila Ridge?
Footing, yeah. I don't know specifically. I don't know if we have someone from HECO here. Do we? Nobody from HECO? Yeah, I don't know. The easement would include it, though. It's broad enough because it's really for the transmission and distribution lines and poles. So it would include the ability to input footing. I mean, do you have a concern at that, board member?
Well, I know that in the past, whenever we've dealt with HECO improvements or expansions of their footprint, especially in the forest reserve areas, we would want to include conditions that deal with, you know, minimization of the risks of invasive weed introductions and consultations with the Division of Forestry and Wildlife as they take actions within that area.
Sam, your audio is problematic.
Really, is it bad?
Yeah. Now we can't hear you.
We can add conditions, you know, if board member wishes to do so.
Russell, I think that, you know, HECO is trying to just replace some steel structures, so they would require some footings for the steel structures that they're trying to replace.
Yeah, right.
Says the proposed project as submitted will include replacing two existing towers that are significantly corroded.
Right.
With a single self-supporting steel structure, which will have the same height as existing structures, but will be less visually imposing.
I'm pretty darn sure they're going to need footings, yeah, like Jimmy.
This is 200 extra square feet for the new structure.
I mean, we can add conditions if board member Gauman wants to suggest a special condition working with DOFA or. I think he's muted or.
Can you try disconnecting your earbuds? Try, maybe try logging out, logging back in. We will wait for you. We want to hear what
issue is footing.
Okay, let's just hold on and let Dr. Gahn exit the meeting and log back in.
All right, how about now? Is that good?
Yes.
Yes.
But oh, great. You're a little low still, so just speak close to the mic, I guess.
Okay, as long as you can hear me. Yeah, in the past we've had conditions that required consultation with DOFA when they do any improvements within that forest reserve area.
Okay, so we can add that as a condition.
That would be great, I think. We talked about the Oahu Invasive Species Committee and DOFA.
Okay, two separate entities.
Okay, any other questions, comments? Okay, Dr. Gahn, do you want to make a motion, an amended motion?
Yes, I move that we approve the staff recommendation with the addition of the condition that the Hawaiian Electric consult with DOFA and the Oahu Invasive Species Committee as they do their improvements to minimize the risk of invasive species introduction.
Thank you. Is there a second to that?
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that's unanimous. Motion carries as amended. Thank you. Okay, last D item, D10.
D10 is the amendment request for an amendment of a prior grant of a seawall easement for a seawall purposes, adding an additional 16 square feet. This is in the Mauna Loa Bay area. I don't have anything to add to this middle.
Okay, questions, board members? No questions, there's no public testimony.
Move to approve.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you. That passes. All right, we will unanimously. We will, thank you, Russell.
Okay, thanks.
All right, we will move to the M items. Let's get the DOT folks into the meeting here. Okay. One's still joining.
Hey, Derek.
And they have been there.
Okay, fine. How can I tell if I need?
That space is being used by the concessionaire, but there wasn't necessarily a concession space. It was the VIP lounge. Then if they had some plans for it, hopefully they would know.
Okay, Mr. Auerbach, are you set?
Yes, you are. We are, okay. Chair.
Okay, ready for M1-4.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, and aloha, Chair and board members. My name is Mike Auerbach, and with me today is Abby LaRue. We're with the Department of Transportation Airports Division for items M1 through M4. M1 is a request for approval to conduct a public auction to issue a 35-year land lease for the development, construction, use, and maintenance of a hangar for fixed base operations at Kailailoa Airport. Item M2 is a request for approval to issue a revocable permit for aircraft parking at Waimea Kohala Airport. Item M3 is a request for approval to issue a revocable permit for field office and or storage for materials and equipment. And finally, item M4 is a request for approval to issue a revocable permit for a field office and or storage materials and equipment. The last two were both at Lihue Airport. And we're here for any questions that chair or board members may have on any of our items.
Okay, any questions, board members? Mr. Oi.
Rover, I know they have a lot of equipment on the runway. What happened to the runway project that they're doing?
You know, I'm not certain. I'm not familiar with the engineering projects over there at Lihue.
Okay, no, this is wondering because it's been there for almost a year already, and nothing's happening yet. But
right,
maybe there's something going on.
Yeah,
that's all I have.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions, board members?
Mr. Question Ewan. M1. Can you explain the 50% general aviation discount?
Yes. Pursuant to statute, the lease will allow 50% general aviation discount rents. We are going to be offering this through auction. So the applicants will need to be general aviation, and we will be giving them 50% general aviation because they have to develop the land. And that's what the statute allows. So because there's going to be a lot of development, this is right now, it's just a field at the airport. It's paved land, but they will have to develop, they will have to construct, and I think the request, the minimum investment on this project is going to be well over $2 million that we will ask them to put into the premise.
When I think of general aviation, I'm thinking of people with their Piper Cubs, and I was just wondering what the general nature of this project was.
Well, again, we selected a lot at Kalailoa Airport. We're going to put it out for auction. We are going to determine what the requirements will be, and then we'll have applicants come in and apply for it. And then we will be looking at all of the applicants and qualifying them, because they will have to fill out a on-airport operator qualification form. So we will ask them to do that, and we'll take a look at it. And then if they qualify, then they will be putting, then we'll hold the auction. I mean, we'll have a calendar set up for this entire process, and it will be on our website, the airport's website, but the lease isn't written yet. We were looking to secure the space, put out the qualifications and calendar onto our website, and take a look at all the applications and qualify them before the auction.
I appreciate all that. I was just wondering if my idea of what general aviation is not right. Are like helicopter companies, are they general aviation?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So, but Hawaiian Airlines is not general aviation.
Anybody who is a commercial airline with scheduled flights is not considered general aviation.
Okay, so general aviation can be a big, you know, a good size operation, but it's just not your regularly scheduled airlines.
Yes.
So this could be a tour helicopter company. It could be a charter company, maybe.
They would all be considered general aviation, but not necessarily for a fixed-based operation.
Yes, okay. All right. Okay, it's a big project, so I thought I'd ask some questions about it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions, board members? Hearing none, do I have a motion to approve M1 through 4 as submitted?
So moved.
Second.
Second, thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstain? That passes unanimously. Thank you,
Mr. Arlbach. Thank you, Chair Case and board members. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, next up we have M5, Mr. Leong.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Tomita. I'm with DOT Harbors, property manager, here to answer any questions you have for M5.
Okay. All right, M5, any questions, board members? Okay, is there a motion to approve M5 as submitted?
Move to approve M5 as submitted.
Second.
All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Mr. Gomes, I'm sorry, I didn't see if you, thank you. Okay, that passes unanimously. M6 is our last one, Ms. Tomita or Mr. Leong.
Eric Leong, DOT Harbors property manager, here to answer any questions you may have on item M6.
Okay, any questions?
I have a question, Chair.
Yeah.
The lease that they had was from March 1999 to 2008. And after 2008 till now, were they still paying their rent?
Yes, they were.
Because they didn't have They were?
Yeah. They were paying the rent plus the gross receipts. So as an example, like in 2019, the rent was $250,000 for the year. The 2.5% gross receipts were $668,947.28, which then they gave the additional $418,947.28. So that's how they've been paying every year since their lease expired.
Right. Why did it take so long to have this negotiation to come forward?
All I know is that
the expiration of their lease.
It was always with the deputies, beginning with Barry Fukunaga to Mike Formby to Randy Grimm to Dara Young, and for whatever reason, they chose to just keep it at this rate.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Char.
I noticed that the consideration request, the base rent is $8,310 per month. That comes up to about $100,000 per year, which seems low in comparison to the revenues that have been derived over the last number of years at, say, roughly $250,000. I note also that the base rent of $100,000 a year is a alternative of 2.5%. So it's not plus, but it's either or. But my question is, why is the base rent set at $100,000 rather than a higher amount as proven by the historic revenues?
Well, right now that revocable permit rate is based on an appraisal for our revocable permits at Honolulu Harbor. Both the submerged land rate and the subsurface easement rate. This was chosen because right now with COVID-19, the ship is grounded since March 17th. So it was looked at that at least they're paying for parking the boat at that space, but once their business starts generating passengers again, then the gross receipts will probably kick in. And then from there, as they get their business back in order, they'll be able to pay the higher amounts. And it may end up getting, it most likely will, once everything is up and running, be greater than the rent that we would be collecting.
Okay.
Any other questions? If not, is there a motion to approve M6 as submitted?
So move.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstain?
Aye.
Thank you. That passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Board members and participants and viewers. That brings us to the end of our land board meeting, August 28, 2020, and the meeting is adjourned. Have a great weekend. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you, Chair. See you.
Aloha, everybody. Aloha. Have a great weekend.
Aloha. Aloha.